Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayetze. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Vayetze. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayetze. Parshat Vayetze examines the life of Jacob. When Jacob becomes an independent personality, Jacob leaves Be'er Sheva to go to Haran. It is in Haran that he gets married. In fact, he gets married to four wives. It is in Haran that he has 11 of his 12 children, who become the nucleus of the Jewish people later on. Ironically, what I would like to explore today is the topic of barrenness, infertility. To see a number of stories where this comes up in the book of Bereishit and how it is dealt with. The first time that this comes up in Bereishit is in chapter 11, verse 30. In this section, we are giving the background for Abraham. We are told that his father is Terach. We are told that he gets married to Sarai. And by the way, at this point, he's called Abram. And then we're told in verse 30, and Sarai was barren, ein la valad. She has no child. This is the first time in the Chumash that we are told of any woman who is barren. Note the fact that it is emphasized, barren, she has no child. The simple way of taking this in the context is to tell us that there will be no continuity of Terach through the line of Avram. Chapter 11 deals with the genealogy, the movement of the generations from Noah to Avraham. And when we get to the end, it's as if the Torah is now telling us this genealogy, this line, will come to an end with Avram because his wife is barren. Repeating it, saying Ein la valad, is perhaps highlighting no way that she will have a child. Yet when we continue on to chapter 12, and God tells Avraham, Lech lecha, go, leave your father's house, your birthplace, your land, to a land that I will show you. And the first thing which God says afterwards is, Ve'eescha legoy gadol, I will make you into a great nation. So that it is very clear that Avraham can only become a great nation by leaving his father's house. His becoming a great nation is not part of this natural chain, but it is connected with his relationship with God. And should one say that who says that becoming a great nation means that he will have a child? As we continue reading, we see that God again and again mentions the fact that Abraham will have seed, and that his seed will inherit, take possession of the land of Israel. But then we get to chapter 16, a very, very important chapter. After God, in chapter 15, makes a covenant with Abraham, promising him unequivocally that he will have children, promising him that his children will inherit the land. All of a sudden, chapter 16, Sarai emerges as the main figure. And we're told in chapter 16, verse 1, and Sarai, the wife of Avram, did not bear to him a child, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. And verse 2, which is very important, and Sarai said to Avram, behold, now, or please, God has withheld me from giving birth. Come upon my maid, perhaps I will be built up through her. And Avram listened to the voice of his wife Sarai. There are two things that I would like to note in this verse. The first, Sarai sees the fact that she does not have a child as being an act of God. She does not just see this as a fact of nature, but God has withheld from her having a child. And then the follow-up to that is that perhaps she needs to do something to warrant having a child. And the act which she sees doing is giving Abraham her maid to become his wife. Perhaps through this, she will be built up. And there are two ways of understanding this. The simplest way is that her maid, Hagar, will have a child, and Sarai, as the mistress, will be the one to raise that child, so that Hagar's child will become Sarai's child. Sarai will be built up through the child of Hagar. And if she's not able to have her own child, at least let her now enable Avram to have a child, and let her now have a stake in that child by being the one to raise him. Rashi, in his commentary, offers a second explanation. The second explanation is that Sarai anticipates or hopes that in the merit of bringing in a competitor to become Avram's wife, that God will see, and I use this word guardedly, God will see her sacrifice. By sacrificing her unique, exclusive relation with Avram and allowing for him to have a relationship with another woman, God will now, in the merit of that act, open up her womb and give her another child. According to this interpretation, Sarai needs to do something, which is an act of sacrifice, in order to merit having her own child. Sarai never gives up the idea of having her own child. It's not the same as having an adopted child, so to speak. And she's ready to do whatever it takes to enable that to happen. We know the continuation of the story. Hagar has her own child. Sarai does not do so well with Hagar or with Hagar's child Ishmael. But ultimately, Sarai merits having her own child, Yitzchak. And Sarai becomes a full-fledged partner to Avram in the covenant. I think from the story what we see is how much Sarai wants to be part of the covenant which God made with Avram, how much having the child is an integral part of that covenant, and the lengths to which he's prepared to go to have that become a reality. Now let's forward. If we go to chapter 26, in chapter 26, verse 20, chapter 25, verse 21, we come to the next generation. Yitzchak has married Rivka. He's 40 years old when they are married. And then in verse 21 it says, and Yitzchak prays to God. And if I adopt Rashi's understanding of the word vayetar, Yitzchak pleads with God opposite his wife because she is barren. And God responded to his prayer, and Rivka becomes pregnant. And as we know in the continuation of the story, Rivka has twins. Rivka gives birth when Yitzchak is 60 years old. I think it's important to note at this point that it's very striking that once again we have a matriarch who is barren. And I'll jump the gun and say, and in our parsha, we have two matriarchs, Rachel and Leah, who are also barren. Very interesting that somehow all the patriarchs managed to marry matriarchs who are barren. And I would argue that the simplest way of understanding the text, as we will go on to see, is that it wasn't just luck or science, but that God consciously withheld having children from each of the matriarchs. And perhaps as the corollary of that, God wanted that having children should not be something taken for granted, not seen as just some sort of natural biological development, but that each of the matriarchs and patriarchs would see the hand of God in the children that were born to them. And perhaps I would add that in each of the cases, there was something that needed to be done, some way in which they would turn to God in order to merit having a child. With Sarai, it involved bringing in her maid to become Avraham's wife, bringing in the competitor. In the case of Rivka, it involved prayer. There is actually a midrash which says, Isaac prayed in one corner, Rebecca prayed in another corner. Ultimately, God responded to the prayer of Isaac. And I've spoken about this in a previous podcast. This may have to do with the nature of Isaac's prayer, which is a very intense, powerful, persistent type of prayer, where he prays day in, day out, 20 years, until God finally responds to his prayer. So that here there was no need, and I would even add, no desire, to bring in another wife. And ultimately, the child is the product of fervent prayer. Now we come to our parsha. If we turn to chapter 29, and perhaps I'd like to begin, with verse 30. Jacob comes to Haran. Jacob is very much interested in marrying Rachel. Jacob makes an agreement with Laban, Rachel's father, Rebekah's brother, that he will work 7 years in order to earn her to be his wife. And then lo and behold, on the wedding day, Jacob is deceived. He's given Leah instead of Rachel. And then what happens is that Laban says, how could I possibly give you Rachel, Leah's the eldest? So they make another agreement that Jacob will marry also Rachel for an additional 7 years of work. And what ends up happening is, in verse 30, it says that Jacob comes also upon Rachel. Jacob loves Rachel also more than Leah, and he works for him another 7 years. Interestingly, the way the Torah formulates it is, Jacob loves Leah, but he loves Rachel even more. But then all of a sudden we get to verse 31. And when God saw Kisnu'a Leah, when God saw that Leah was hated, Vayiftachet Rachma, he opens up her womb, V'Rachel Akara, and Rachel was barren. Now it's true, we're not told that Leah was barren, but it does say God opens up her womb, which would seem to imply that she was barren. But what interests me is, what motivates God to open up the womb? By Sarai, it may very well have been the story of Hagar. By Yitzchak, it's the prayer. By Yetar, by Leah, it's her being hated. And look at what follows. In verse 32, and Leah became pregnant, and she gives birth to a son, and she calls him Reuven, because she said, behold, God has seen my affliction, and now my man will love me. She becomes pregnant and has another son. And she says, and God has heard that I am hated, and giving me also this one. And she calls him Shimon. And then she becomes pregnant and has another son, and says, this time, my man will accompany me, because I have borne him three sons. And he called him Levi. Interestingly, it would seem it's Jacob who calls him Levi and not Leah. What fascinates me is, in the case of Sarai, having a child was critical in becoming a partner in the covenant, in enabling Abraham to actualize the covenant. In our story, having children is a means to solidifying the relationship between Leah and Yaakov, a relationship which seems to be very strained. It is very interesting that in the Midrash, we get echoes of this, that when Yaakov discovers that it is Leah who he married and not Rachel, that Yaakov is very upset and accuses her of being a deceiver. And one might argue that one of the reasons why Yaakov is not excited about Leah, from the text it could be that she's not so beautiful. From the text it could be that he really fell in love with Rachel and was not really in love, as we think about it, with Leah. But it would also seem to be that there's a certain amount of resentment, anger at the deception. And it's as if God is now intervening to be able to raise the image of Leah in Jacob's eyes through having children. I would also like to add that having the children here becomes very important because, as I mentioned earlier, this is going to be the nucleus of the nation. And it would seem to be that by Leah having three boys in rapid succession, that she is certainly playing a significant role in having this become a reality. If we look subsequently in verse 35, it is interesting that Leah becomes pregnant once again and has a son. And she says, "This time I will thank God." And she called his name Yehuda. And what I think becomes interesting is, when she names the fourth son, it has nothing to do with Jacob. And here it's not clear from the text. Is it that after she has her first three sons, that her relationship with Jacob has actually been shorn up? That in fact, they have a very good relationship now. So that when she has her fourth son, she's able to thank God and appreciate that son in his own right. That having a son is not just a means of enabling her to have a relationship with her husband, but it becomes an independent value. Or, alternatively, is it that Jacob's relationship to her has not dramatically changed? And perhaps we can see that even when she has, after her first child, when she has her second child, she calls the second child Shimon because she says, "God saw that I was hated," as if even after the first child, she still feels hated. But maybe by the time she has her fourth child, she is resigned to the fact that she might not have such a wonderful relationship with Jacob. But nevertheless, there is a tremendous value in having these children and perhaps making her contribution to the future of the Jewish people. Note the fact that in chapter 30, verse 1, it says, "When Rachel saw ki lo yalda li Yaakov," that she did not give birth to Yaakov, she becomes jealous of her sister. She comes to Yaakov and says, "Give me children, and if not, I am dead." And then Jacob's response is, "Vayichar af Yaakov b'Rachel," and he becomes angry at Rachel. "Vayomer," and he says, "Hatachat Elohim anochim," I in place of God, who is withheld from you, fruits of the womb. These verses become very important. And once again, it is not clear from the verses why Rachel is jealous. Is she jealous because Leah has now developed a very warm relationship with Yaakov, which has now resulted in perhaps a cooler relationship that she has, and therefore she wants to have children in order to renew her relationship with Yaakov? Or is it that her relationship with Yaakov is wonderful, but she feels jealous because she feels excluded now from playing her larger role as the mother of the nation? It is interesting that when Sarai did not have a child, she does not go to Avram and say, "Give me a child." She feels that she needs to do something. Rebecca did not have a child. If we take the Midrashic understanding, her response is to pray. Isaac prayed and she prayed. But here we find Rachel, who presents what would seem to be an ultimatum to Yaakov and says, "Give me children. If not, I am dead." and Yaakov becomes angry. How do we understand this? I would like to bring up two explanations that are offered by commentaries. One explanation, which is given by the Ramban Nachmanides, is that Rachel comes to Yaakov and says, "Your father prayed for a child, and God responded to his prayer, and your mother had twins. But I am still barren. Evidently, you are not praying hard enough. Evidently, you don't really care about me. Evidently, you care only about yourself because you have children from my sister." And according to the Ramban, Jacob becomes angry because he feels that she has a misunderstanding of what prayer is all about. And Jacob says, "This is something which is not in my hands. It is in God's hands. God has withheld from you having a child." In effect, what Jacob is saying is, one needs to pray, but there is no guarantee to prayer. Ultimately, it's God's decision how to respond. And one perhaps could even add, maybe Jacob is hinting to her, "Don't look at me, look at you. What are you doing? Maybe in fact you need to do something more." And in fact, the immediate response of Rachel is to offer Jacob her maid, and through her to be built up in the same fashion as Sarai. That's one way of looking at it. There's a second opinion which is given, which I think would perhaps resonate on modern ears, by a commentary called the Akedat Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, who lived in the 1400s, late 1400s, was among those expelled from Spain, who said that Jacob becomes angry when Rachel says, "Give me a child or I am dead," as if to say, "If I can't have a child, my life is not worth living." And Jacob becomes angry because Jacob, in effect, says to her, "Yes, having children is one aspect of a woman's role in the world. But there's another aspect, which is to lead a life which is fulfilled in other ways, to actualize yourself independent of having children. And therefore, if one is incapable of having children, in no way does that mean her life is not worth living." I think it resonates on our modern ears. I don't know how much I would call this the pshat, because it seems to be, as I said earlier, that Rachel's response is not to go and learn in a yeshiva or to start doing acts of charity, but to actually give her maid to Jacob in order to be built up to somehow have a child. Interestingly, the moment Rachel does this, her maid becomes pregnant. And in chapter 30, verse 6, Rachel names this baby Dan, because she says, "God has judged me. God has heard my voice. He has now finally given me a son." And then once again, her maid becomes pregnant. And she calls the child Naphtali. "I have struggled with my sister and I have prevailed." And then Leah also gives her maid to Jacob, because she has stopped giving birth and she has a child. And then we're told of a fascinating story where Leah comes from the field and where there's a kind of a business arrangement that she makes with her sister. Leah's son Reuven has mandrakes, what we would call today aphrodisiacs. He brings them to his mother to perhaps enable her to continue having children. And Rachel comes to her and says, "Please give me these." And then they make an agreement. In return for the mandrakes, that evening, Jacob will be with Leah. And interestingly enough, God listens to Leah and she becomes pregnant and has two more children. And then finally we get to verse 22, where it says, "And God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her, and finally God opens up her womb." And I would like to just read one commentary, the Sforno, who says, "God remembered Rachel, that Rachel really made the effort to try to have children. She brought in a competitor, namely her maidservant. She gave her to Jacob. She also made this agreement with Leah regarding the mandrakes. And then he says, and God heard her voice, or God heard her. After she had done these acts, she prayed, and God listened to her prayer, opened up her womb, and finally she has a son, Yosef. All the stories which I have looked at today are all poignant stories, stories which are very charged emotionally, which show the tremendous desire of having children, the frustration, the pain of barrenness. On the one hand, it would seem to be a natural desire to have children as part of the fulfillment of a role of the woman, as the Midrashim play up in another story, which we will not deal with today, by Hannah, the mother of Samuel, who also is barren. And in the Talmud, they speak about how she challenges God and says, you gave me these breasts, you gave me this womb, but if I'm barren, so what role do they play? Why have them? So that there seems to be something that it would be the natural thing for these women to have children and thereby become fulfilled as women. And yet, nevertheless, God withholds it. Across the board, to all of the matriarchs, as a way of showing that having a child should not just be something which comes naturally and as a result taken for granted. But maybe people need to go through a certain process of development, transformations. Maybe people have to see having a child as being a gift from God and ask themselves, why do we want this? In some cases, this requires prayer. Pray for a child. In other cases, perhaps there is a need for self-sacrifice, of perhaps giving up something in order to get something much greater. I mentioned that having children may be part of the fulfillment of the role of being a woman. In the stories that we dealt with, it seems to be much larger. On one level, it seems to be, and certainly in our parsha, it seems to be something which is very important in terms of solidifying the relationship between the couple. I would like to be very, very careful, as I mentioned earlier, that the whole relationship cannot be predicated on having children. And that the assumption that by having a child, right, everything will be wonderful between us is not necessarily a valid assumption. Yet nevertheless, there is something about having children that solidifies the bond between the couple because of the sense of having created something together. The other element is, by having children, this is perhaps how one participates in the continuity of the Jewish people. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, when we're told that Sarai is barren, she cannot have a child, at that point in time there is no Jewish people. But there is a certain line of humanity, the line of Noah, as it goes through Terach. And it seems that that line will come to an end with Avram. And on a certain level, the line of Terach does come to an end, because a new line is formed, the line of Avraham. And interestingly enough, in that line we have incorporated the line of Nahor through Rivka. In that line we have incorporated Haran, the third brother, through Lot and his descendants, in particular Ruth, who ultimately produces King David. So that having children is not just about me, my fulfillment, not just about me and my spouse, but it's ultimately about me and how I continue the Jewish people. And as I mentioned earlier, this is something which is a privilege, something which is not to be taken for granted, something which needs to be earned and valued. And I would like to end with a point which I mentioned earlier, namely the reality of the Bible, which I am trying to describe, is one in which God intervenes very dramatically, and ultimately all the matriarchs become mothers. But there are realities where it doesn't all turn out with a happy ending, where people pray, where people make all kinds of efforts to be able to have children, and perhaps their prayers, their efforts, are not answered. And here's where I think the point of the Akedat Yitzchak becomes very important. Having children is seen as being a significant, central value in Judaism. Jewish continuity is very, very significant. Having children as an expression of actualizing, being in the image of God, as we find in the first chapter of Bereishit. All of these are very true. But there's another aspect, that my life is valuable, even if I can't have children. And if we think of it in the language that we use of fulfillment, on one level it's how can I become the best person I can possibly be? How can I make a home with a spouse, which can be a model, even where there may not be children? And last of all, how is it possible to make a contribution to the Jewish people, to humanity, which may be very, very important, independent of having children? This is a challenge to all of us. And I would end by saying, perhaps these parshiyot teach us that we should not take life for granted, to not assume that it's there and it will always be there, but that we need to be proactive, take our lives into our own hands. We need to always be asking ourselves, what are we doing with our lives? How are we furthering others? And in whatever small way, making our contribution to the future of the Jewish people. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.